Rabbi Breidowitz, April 29th.
Last week I had to be in town. Yeah, I guess we're continuing. You know, the last thing we were talking about is we're focusing on the Avaita of Sfira Sa'omer. And what we had been talking about was the connection between Pesach and Shavuos in terms of if Pesach is a time of freedom, Shavuos is a time of commitments, and therefore the Torah's merames to us something that all of us, I think, see in our own lives, that a freedom that does not have a structure and a submission to the Ratzon Hashem is ultimately something that is very self-destructive. We began talking about the second theme of Sfira, which is Kavod Zeh L'Zeh, and I'll get to that in a second. There's one more point I want to make about the connection between freedom and submission to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now, on one level, you can understand it, that when you have a society like the United States where the only value that is left in this society is freedom. You know, do what you want as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, and sometimes even if it does hurt somebody. So we can see how destructive that is. But the emphasis is there's something even in Ruchnius on a much more subtle level that's involved here. And if you go back a few weeks ago to the death of Nadav and Avihu, Nadav and Avihu were the two children of Aaron. And the day that the Mishkan was dedicated, the Torah says they brought an Eish Zara, they brought a foreign fire into the Mishkan. What that seems to mean is that normally when you're Makdir the Ketiris, when you bring the incense, you're supposed to take the fire from the Mizbeach, the outer Mizbeach, and the coals from the outer Mizbeach, and the incense is then brought on the inner Mizbeach. They did not take coals from the outer Mizbeach, they brought a fire from outside of the Mishkan. And as a result, they died immediately. A fire went into their bodies. It did not destroy their bodies. It destroyed their neshamas, as it were. And they died. Now, the Torah says what sin they did. The Torah says they did the sin of bringing in an Eish Zara. That's what it says beferish. And yet we know, Rashi brings it, that Chazal give us a lot of Averos that Nadav and Avihu did. One Avera was that they entered the Mishkan. They drank wine before they entered the Mishkan, and one is not allowed to drink wine when you enter the Mishkan, and that's why right after their death the Torah says Yayin v'sheichor al teisht. Another aveira was they didn't get married. A third aveira was that they would paskin halachos in the presence of Moshe and Aaron, which one is not allowed to do. In fact, technically, by the way, that's what smicha is. You know, all of us have fake smichas. A real smicha refers to an unbroken line all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Our lines have been broken. So all of the authority of smicha and the Gemara to be a judge, etc., none of that really applies today. So what is smicha? Smicha is permission from one's Rebbe to paskin a shayla. Because according to the Gemara is very strict. One is not allowed to paskin a shayla without the permission of their Rebbe. So that's why one should have smicha if one is going to paskin. Not because it is the real smicha of the Gemara. It is not. None of us. There is no such thing as the real smicha anymore. But it's an authorization. Now, Nadav and Avihu paskined, paskined in the presence of their Rebbe. And there's another interpretation. They were not wearing the proper big day kahuna, the garments of the Kohen. So the question is this. Chazal give us a million Averas. And the Torah says what the Avera is. They brought in an Eish Zara. And to add to this, by the way, there are two other Maimori Chazal that talk about the chait of Nadav and Avihu. One is that Nadav and Avihu were chayav Misa from the time of Matan Torah. You remember there's a phrase in Parshas Mishpatim, Vayechazu es Elokim. They were gazing at God, whatever that means. Vayochlu, Vayishtu, they were eating and drinking. This was treated as Kalos Rosh, as disrespect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they should have been chayav Misa then. But Hashem did not want to destroy the joy of Matan Torah, so he deferred it to later. Of course, later was also a festive day, the day of the Mishkan. But you see, Matan Torah, apparently, was even a greater simcha than the Mishkan. And there's a final Maimer Chazal, Nadav and Avihu died because of Aaron's chait in the chait o'egel. Right? There's a pasuk in Parshas Ekev where Moshe says that Hashem was angry at Aaron and he wanted to destroy him. And Rashi says, from here Chazal learn out that tefillah isa mechza, that tefillah can be effective at least halfway, if not the whole way, because Aaron had four children, and two of them died, two of them survived. So, what we have is the following. The Torah itself says what the Aveira was. The Aveira was Eish Zara. Chazal give us a bunch of other explanations. Chazal say they drank, they didn't get married, they were Meir Halacha Bifnei Rabo, they Paskin Bifnei Rabo, they were Mechusrei Begadim, they weren't wearing Big Day Kahuna, and then they connected to Matan Torah, where they were gazing at the Shechina, whatever that means, and finally the Chedo Egel. So number one, is there anything that connects all of these ideas? And after all, is it not the problem, doesn't the Torah say what the Aveira is? Eish Zara. So why do Chazal find all sorts of other sins that Nadav and Avihu may have done, or that Aaron himself did? Another question, and you'll see how this will connect to the idea of Sefiras HaEmor, I'll get to that shortly. Another question is this. You know, the Constitution of the United States has a provision that says one cannot be punished for an ex post facto law. An ex post facto law means a law that they enact after you did it. For example, let's assume they want to pass a law that you can't be out in the street after 11. Well, if I'm out in the street after 11, they can't pass the law the next day and then punish me for being out of the street after 11, because when I did it, it was okay. Now the question is this. The commandment not to drink wine when you go into the Mishkan was given in response to Nadav and Avihu's death. It was after Nadav and Avihu died, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, tell Bnei Yisrael never to drink wine and go into the Mishkan. So, Mimanav Shach, if the law was given in response to their death, that means at the time that they drank, there was no Aveira to drink. So you might say, maybe they were drunk. Not just so drinking, even logically, one should know you don't enter drunk. But if they're great tzaddikim, they certainly didn't enter drunk. They just violated the technical prohibition of drinking even a little bit. But the technical prohibition was not given until afterwards. So don't we have, as it were, l'havdil unconstitutional ex post facto, after the fact law? Right? How do you do it? So this is a bunch of things to think about. Now, let me tell you a very nice pshat on the last question only, which is kind of a discreet little digression, but a very, very interesting idea. Maybe it's particularly appropriate for one of the rooms. And that is, there's an argument in the 8th chapter of Brachos. What is the order by which you make Kiddush? Beis Shammai says, the order by which you make Kiddush is first you make the blessing on Shabbos. You say Mekadesh Shabbos, then you say Berei Pri Hagafen afterwards. We, of course, don't follow that. We follow the view of Beis Hillel that says, first you make blessing on the wine, then you make blessing on the kiddush. Now, is there any logic to that particular argument? So the Tiferes Yisrael gives a mashal like this. Imagine a person who had to get up for a very important business trip. And he's very excited because there's so much profit he'll make, there's so much benefit that will accrue to him. So he's so excited he can't even sleep all night. And he'll certainly be up in time. He'll be up at 3 in the morning to pack his things and everything else. Now let's assume he has a shamish, a servant, someone that he needs to help him. But the servant is not going to be as excited about this trip as the master, because the servant doesn't get any benefit out of it. But the master needs the servant. So how does the master get the servant involved in the preparations of the trip? So he says he gets up early. He gets up before the servant and he makes coffee. And the nice aroma of the coffee wafts through the house, and the servant gets awake. Oh, a good cup of coffee, that'll even perhaps get the servant awake, or eggs, or whatever it's going to be. So he says, the same thing is with the neshama and the guf. He says, the neshama gets tremendous pleasure in doing mitzvahs. The connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tefillah, Rav Yehuda Halevi says, tefillah is the food of the neshama. He says, the reason we daven three times a day is because just as the body needs nourishments commonly three times a day, so the soul needs the nourishment three times a day. I always say that you could take Yehuda Halevi's analogy a little bit further in terms of what is a tefillah without kavana. You know, if tefillah is a meal, so one can live on junk food. If all one would eat would be potato chips and chocolate, you're not going to die. You will live, but you know, it's not going to be a very healthy life. So a tefillah without kavana is like junk food. It keeps the soul alive, but it doesn't keep the soul that healthy. But be it as it may, the neshama gets tremendous joy from avodas Hashem. But the guf does not get that involved in it. So just as, now the guf is like the servant, right? The servant for the master. The shem is the master. The guf is the servant. So just as the servant gets involved in the ultimate goal through physical and material pleasure, so too in avodas Hashem, it is often the material that brings us to the spiritual. And this is the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai is looking at things the way they ought to be. The way they ought to be, it should be the joy of Shabbos itself that moves me so much that I want to express my joy by a tzedakah. So therefore, Beis Shammai, first you express the joy of Shabbos. And from the Shabbos, you then express your joy through drinking wine. Beis Hillel says, that might be the way, that might be the way it ought to be, but that's not the way it often is. With human beings, very often, it's the material pleasure that brings us to appreciate the spiritual pleasure. So Beis Hillel says, we get into Shabbos from the wine instead of getting into the wine from the expression of our holiness of Shabbos. And this is, of course, an old saying in the Baal Tshuva movement and the Kirov movement, that a bowl of cholent can do more good than many, many drushas. And that is because very often it is through the physical pleasure, and also even the emotional pleasure of togetherness, of company, of friendship, and through food and through aesthetics, that one becomes a receptacle in which they can appreciate the dimensions of avodas Hashem. Ideally, one would think, the Eved Hashem can live on bread and salt, can live in the most uncomfortable physical conditions, because the Kesher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is greater and more important than all of those things. That's the ideal, and that is kind of what Beis Shammai is stressing. But Beis Hillel says that in the world that we live in, it is often the Gashmias, it is often the physical in our lives that can bring us to an appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is why Chazal indeed say that a dira no'eh, a beautiful home, are one of the things that are marchivin dato shel adam, that can expand a person's consciousness and mind to make them receptive. So it's an important aspect of avodas Hashem to, again, not to, of course, be a slave to gashmius, that of course is totally no good, but to use the materialism in our lives to enhance our appreciation of avodas Hashem. And therefore that is what Beis Hillel is saying. Now, according to this, Rav Zevin says, maybe that was the Aveira of Nadav and Aviyu. Nadav and Aviyu were very great tzaddikim, and they should have appreciated the holiness of the Mishkan from that spiritual vantage point. Instead, they took a drink. Why does one take a drink? In other words, they followed Beis Hillel's approach to give themselves an artificial source of joy to be more open to the spiritual experience. Now, Enochinami, for anybody else, that would be okay at the time, because the prohibition was not given until later. It's not the pshat that they were punished because they violated an Aveira. There was no Aveira yet. But Lefi Madregasim, according to their Madrega, what they were doing is they were utilizing physical stimulants to reach a level of joy when, according to their Madrega, the spiritual experience itself should have been enough. And that is why they died. I knew that they were very holy. You might say, Fakert, they died because of an Aveira. The Aveira was an Aveira only for a Kadosh. It wouldn't have been an Aveira for other people who we sometimes need the stimulants, in whatever sense it is, to be able to reach a spiritual Madrega.
One of the things we do in this world is to take the physical and
elevate
it. So it's very interesting. I would normally think of it in terms of shamai. You have a spiritual context,
right?
And then you draw in to express that spirituality. You
right.
draw in the physical.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yet can Hillel be understood to be saying?
Well,
the concept in different terms,
it's
or
a
is
both
that
way.
Strictly
no. I think it's a two level. In other words, the relations between physical and spiritual are indeed two different ways, going backwards and forwards on each other. That is, it is sometimes the brute, naked experience of the physical that can make us receptive to the spiritual, and then once we become spiritualized, we can now elevate that physical and use that. Meaning to say that from Hillel's derech, you go to Shammai's derech. That's correct. And in fact, it is said that ultimate truth resides with Shammai. The Ari says that Liyasid Lava, the halacha will be like Rosh Hashanah. So that's the pshat. I think that's exactly the concept. That Hillel is moda, that we should adopt that Shammai's approach, but first we have to experience the Gashmias for Gashmias, bringing us to Ruchnis, and then we can elevate the Ruchnis also. So both are right. As Mamash says, the Gemara says indeed, by the Machlokas by Shammai and Beis Hillel, Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both Shammai and Hillel are right. And they are, but Shammai is starting you off at a higher point, and Hillel says that for most of us we have to start at a lower point. And that's why, you know, it's interesting, Rav Zevin points out that many, many things, you know, normally the standard understanding we have is Beis Shammai tends to be stricter, which is usually the case, and Beis Hillel tends to be more lenient. And then you come to a machlokas like here, what's the order of Shabbos, and that seems not to be connected to that. But it really is connected to that. Because if Beis Shammai looks at the human being in the ideal sense, how should a human being be? So it'll tend to be a stricter standard. And that'll affect itself in how you come to the Gashmias through the Ruchnis. Beis Hillel looks at the human being the way we are with our imperfections. And therefore that'll tend to be a more lenient standard. And you come to the Ruchnis from the Gashmias, right? It goes that way. In fact, even another Machlokas, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, could be explained this way. You know, one of the famous arguments between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is how do you light Hanukkah candles? Beis Shammai says you start with 8 and you go down. And Beis Hillel says, you start with 1 and you go up. It has to be an issue of strict or lenient. But the Gemara explains that Beis Shammai says you look at potential. So the first night of Hanukkah, when they lit the candles, there was 8 days of potential in that oil. By the second night, there's only 7 days. So in terms of potential, you go down. Beis Hillel looks at actualization. Now, that if that's a prototype for the human being, because again, a human being is called the Ner of Hashem, then it turns out Beis Shammai judges us by our potential for goodness, which by definition is a higher standard than we normally realize. Beis Hillel looks at the actualization of that potential, and therefore that's also Mekusher to all of these different ideas. So that's going to be one explanation, because that still doesn't get back to the other Averos, and it still doesn't get back to the Torah says Eish Zara, right? That first question that just explains the Shesuyayim. So here the Netziv tells us, and Sisifri Hasidus also talk about it a lot, that there is a tension, and again, maybe not so much among the Firmailim here, but certainly in the world out there, there is sometimes perceived to be a tension between what we call spirituality and the demands of halacha. On one level, the person wants to be close to Hashem, to feel a sense of intimacy, connection. But then a person sometimes feels that the details of halacha may interfere with a person's desire to be spiritually attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, for example, you can give many, many examples. Let's assume that, you know, a person's been working so hard for Pesach. And, you know, Pesach are just too tired. They're too tired that night to have a Seder. You know, they're too tired that night. And they say, in a few days, I'll be fine. You know, next week, I will be in a very, very good spirit. And I'll eat my matzah and my maror a week later. Or it comes davening, right? A person dies to daven. Their tefillah has zmanim. Shachris has a zman. Mincha has a zman. Well, what if a person is not inspired until, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Okay, again, women have a little bit of more flexibility in terms of Zman Tefillah, that's true, but certainly the men, you can only daven Shachris at certain times of days. So there is often a stira, there is often a contradiction in a person's heart between the desire of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the particularistic demands that halacha makes. And thus you'll find many people say that people who aren't from or not so shomer mitzvahs, that they say that they can't do all these details because it prevents them from relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Netziv basically says that none of the Naviyah were on such a madrega that they wanted to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any boundaries, without any gevul. See, what mitzvahs are is, mitzvahs are Hashem's admission tickets to gain access to it. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in effect tells us, you can have a relationship. You have to have a relationship with me based on my rules. I tell you when you relate. I tell you how you connect. You cannot establish the relationship the way you want it and on your terms. So, come to Christ like this. What mitzvahs represent generally is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's statement to us that we can always have a relationship to him, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu defines that relationship, and therefore there are times in which there's a certain amount of distance that must be there, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu defines when we approach him. So the Svarim say that none of an Avius Chait, if it was a Chait, as the Fi according to the Madrega, they were so holy, they were so elevated, they were so high, that they felt that the constraints and boundaries of halacha should not apply to their situation. And if you look at all the averus of Chazal, you can see this one thread. The Eish Zara, the foreign fire, can be understood symbolically. Fire is a passion for Avodas Hashem, a love of Hashem. What does Shir HaShirim say? When Shir HaShirim describes metaphorically the love that B'nai Yisrael has for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for B'nai Yisrael, what does it say? Mayim rabim lo yuchlu l'chabos es ha'ava. The torrential waters, which Chazal say is the persecution of Golus and everything else, can never put out this raging fire. And none of an Aviyu had that raging fire of the love of Hashem to a greater level even than Moshe and Aaron. But it was Zara, it was strange, because it was not based on Hashem's commands. It was based on their own feeling. And go through this. Shesuya Yayin, again, is the concept of they wanted to reach artificial states of consciousness, right? You can talk about it, Mamish, today. Drug cultures, there are people who are into even drugs. I don't mean, you know, stop criminals, but there are Indians and the like who are into peyote and other things, because they do reach exalted states of consciousness. Meditative exercises in which they somehow connect to an image of the divine. Not marrying is the idea that one achieves holiness by separation and renunciation from the world, like celibacy. They took it upon themselves because they thought these were exercises that would spiritualize them and make them closer to Hashem. But they weren't Hashem's tzivah. In effect, they're trying to establish closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not within the confines of the law. The Aveira of Mayra Halacha B'fnei Rabba can be understood as they were not accepting tradition. They were not accepting halacha. They had their own halacha.
They must have had a basis for that. I think they were taught that halacha works on all levels, no matter how great you are. I mean, there must have been something. Where did they get that idea?
Okay, I'll get to that in a second, because that's an important point. Then the issue, of course, then if we keep on going on in this, not wearing garments, not wearing the Big Day Kahuna. Again, a garment is that which separates, you know, the human being. It creates boundaries. They wanted to remove the boundaries. It's a removal of boundaries to directly connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not through the distance of the law. Even if we go back to the fact that at Matan Torah, they were the one who gazed at the Shekhinah. Right? It's connected to that. Vayechasu es Elokim. And of course, even Aaron's chait, with the chait o'ego, which according to Chazal may have been the source of the death of Nadav and Aviyu, according to the Ramban, that was also an attempt to get close to Hashem by having an intermediary. You know, the Ramban says that when Moshe was gone, the Jewish people felt they needed an intermediary to connect them to Hashem. So the common thread here, and the fancy English word for this, is antinomianism. Antinomianism is a rebellion against law. The concept that law, rule, halacha, is a stira, is a contradiction to Ruchnius. It's a refrain that we actually hear very, very often in the world today. I remember years ago giving a shir on the laws of Tisha B'Av. So we were discussing, you know, how far you could wash your hands up to the knuckle, what knuckle, right? So a woman got up, I think this was Reitz Chaim, years ago, a woman got up and said, you know, she does cannot understand how an infinite Ribbono Shel Olam can possibly be interested in whether we wash up to the first knuckle or the second knuckle. And I said, well, it's precisely because the Ribbono Shel Olam is infinite that he could be infinitely concerned with every small detail. You're right. If we had to manage, if we were up there in our Josh, the Abishter gave us the job to manage the world for one day, we wouldn't have the time to be concerned. We'd be too busy with other things. But the Ribbono Shel Olam could do it. But you know, but that's a feeling. So now the emphasis of the emphasis. The emphasis is the following. The emphasis is there was at least such a musak of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on your own individual basis. That's really what the Avos did. before Matan Torah, a person developed a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on their own intuitions, their own feelings, their own perception of what was right. There was no authority. The Eibishter did not give, except for Bris Milah, but you know, the Abbas did not, were not given mitzvos in large number. And when Chazal say the Abbas kept the Torah before it was given, that was their voluntary perception that this was good. It was not because they were commanded. So in effect, Nadav and Avihu were extrapolating the model that the Abbas had used, and they felt, they basically felt this. This is the certain shemitz, perhaps, of Gaiva. It's true that the average person out there needs structure, needs guidance, needs rules, because the average person is incapable of creating a new relationship with Hashem from the bottom up. But we are different. We are different. We can do this. We can transcend Allah. And the emes is the following. The emes is, we don't have evidence that they were wrong. Because Fakir, when they were killed, Moshe's only comment to Aaron was, "Bikrovaya Kodesh, Hashem sanctifies His name with those who are most holy." It's not that they were wrong, but that they were dangerous. They could not be a role model for the Jewish people. Hashem had to take them out of the world because they were too holy for this world. Meaning to say, again, none of us could ever pass on such a thing, but it is theoretically possible that there might be neshamas who can have their kesher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu beyond the framework of the din. But these neshamas can never be the leaders of Klal Yisrael, and these neshamas cannot be the role models of Klal Yisrael, and it may be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take them out of the world because they don't belong in this world. They're like Malachi Asharis, who are in a different madrega. The Mefarshim say, I mean, this is really going back to the very beginning of the Torah, the mysterious Chanoch, right? It says, Bishalech Chanoch es Elokim. Chanoch was walking with Hashem, and Hashem took him away. It's not clear exactly what he did, but it seems to be a type of person who was so davuk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he did not belong to this world. So in a sense, we could say that it's not an issue of Nadav and Avihu being punished. The issue is not punishment. The issue is they are not of this world, and they are dangerous as role models and leaders of Klal Yisrael, and therefore they must be taken away, because we have to live a world, because we don't have the madrega to perceive how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu totally. And of course, again, within Torah we have to develop our own relationship. That's very much true as well, but it has to start off with the base of Shemiras HaMitzvahs and the like. I was thinking, you know, you could say, I mean, even in much later years, among Hasidim even today, there were rebbes who don't daven on time, etc. You know, shachris, they may daven in the afternoon, and you know, the question is, how do we justify that? Is there such a legitimacy? And I'm not going to, you know, justify it per se, but the concept is related to something like Nadav and Avihu were involved, and it's a similar idea that maybe the unique tzaddikim can be above certain boundaries, at least for drabbanan, like tefillah. Again, tefillah is a drabbanan, it's not. But again, the question is, but is that a justification for the followers, right? What's a justification for the Rav is not necessarily just for the followers.
So who are we following? We're following
Moshe. Of course, even Moshe, for example, had practices that we're not supposed to follow. Right? Moshe separated from his wife. We're not supposed to follow that. So even Moshe had certain uniqueness. But Moshe's greatness, we find this, is that he was always able to re-enter the world at the same time. In other words, he was living in two worlds at the same time. Nadav and Avihu were more of the next world than of this one.
I always understood that, you know, another way of saying we're attacked in this world is to become an Eved Hashem. What were the others?
The others were an Eved Hashem, but an Eved Hashem, see, they had a harder task. They were an Avadim of Hashem who were not told what their job was. I mean, let's assume that, you know, you're in someone's service, and the master basically says, figure out what it is that I want. And in order for the Eved to be an Eved, figuring out, the Eved has to totally enter the mind of the master and have such a kesher that they can perceive the ratzon of the master without being told. That's a very high madrega.
But it seems to me they were the prerequisite, and it seems to me that there's more of a Gilui Hashem if we are Avdei Hashem in nullifying our, whatever our greatness is and bringing that much more to the world.
Well, you can look at it two ways. You could say, however, that the Maila of the Avos was the ability to nullify themselves to the Ratzon Hashem in the sense of being their minds and their hearts became empty vessels to perceive what it was that Hashem wanted them to do in the world.
And Moshe?
Moshe himself was certainly on the same Madrega, but Moshe's task in life was to be the one who brought down the Ratzon Hashem so that every human being can now see it and perceive it and understand it. So Matan Torah, I don't want to call it a failure in a sense, but Matan Torah represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu's determination that human beings were no longer in a position where they could decide for themselves on their own what is right and what is wrong. It's very interesting. I once heard somebody explain, you know, we have in English an expression, because in Hebrew is the same expression, that one should only follow their internal compass. We'll throw it off. So the person said, you know, it's true. Human beings do have a compass. But if one is tainted with their self-interest and their selfishness and their ego, that is like an opposing magnetic field that throws the compass off. In a community, we have a compass. But, you know, not even our compass is going to be accurate all the time. The others were on a madriga where the compass was accurate. And if the compass is accurate, a human being will know what's right. So we're makir that there is such an idea. And maybe none of it of you had that madriga. We don't know. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, for Bnei Yisrael as a whole, they can't look at that. Because otherwise, where is it going to lead? So this is the kesher. So again, this connects to Sphira very much. The concept of freedom to do the Ratzon Hashem requires revelation. That's why revelation is so fundamental, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to tell us how we should live our lives. And again, I want to emphasize, this is obviously not to the exclusion of trying to develop our individual kesharim, but it has to be within a framework, within that guidance. Let me just finish one thought. The Chiddush Yerim makes this point in a different way. He says very nicely, it's a famous thought, the Chiddush Yerim says, that we find that before Hashem gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, he went to all the nations of the world and he offered them the Torah, and he went to Yishmael and he said, do you accept the Torah? And they said, Ma kasav ba, what is written in it? And Hashem said, don't steal. And they said, well, we can't accept that. We make our life, we make a living stealing. Esav, don't kill, etc. So there are a few things. First of all, they asked Akasha, most nations of the world are renounced stealing and renounced murder. I mean, it was too hard for them. So he says, and so some of Farshim say that the concept is, they're willing to accept in their own lives not to steal and not to kill, but they're not willing to accept Hashem's definitions of those terms. They say, in other words, if you're telling us what the meaning of these terms are, that we don't accept. In other words, like America, we're willing to say, don't kill, but you can kill babies before they're born. In other words, we're willing, we want to have, or you can have now physician-assisted suicide. I don't know if you've been following this. It is now a constitutional right in the United States of America. That means a right that is guaranteed, that cannot be forbidden by law for a patient to commit suicide. Not only that, but to enlist other people to help him commit suicide.
It's a federal right, or is it just going on?
Well, it's now a federal constitutional right. It hasn't gone to the Supreme Court yet, but two courts of appeal in New York and in California, and they're the next level, have all said it's okay. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. We don't know what they'll say. My guess is they'll say it's okay also. Right? So, this word becomes more true as years go on, meaning to say, yeah, we as a society accept not killing, and we accept not stealing, but we want to make our exceptions to it. We don't want to accept Ribbono Shel Olam's definitions. That's what the Mefarshim say, why they didn't accept. But the Chiddush Yerim asks a different question, and he says, what was the test that Bnei Yisrael were given? Why didn't Hashem give them some commandments that's very hard for them to keep? Well, one answer might be because they didn't ask. They said, Nasa the Mishnah. I forget, they didn't ask. But the Chiddush Yerim says, Hashem gave them that is very hard for a Jew to keep, and that is the commandments that they have to build a mechitza around Har Sinai and not approach it for 3 days. Remember Matan Torah. And for a Jew to be told, you can't approach Hashem in a certain way, is the hardest thing for a Jew to accept. But sometimes we have to know that there's a distance. And the need for the distance, that is our lo tzertzach and our lo siknuf, to know that there's a question of a distance. And even in every bracha, look, this is a point that I think you've heard before, and I may have said it before. In every bracha, all brachas are not grammatical. All brachas combine second person and third person. Let's take Shahakol. Shbruch Ata Hashem, blessed are you Hashem. Shahakol Miyad B'dvaro, everything came into existence through His word. Why don't you say Shahakol Miyad B'dvarecha? Everything came into existence through your word. So the Rishonim point out already that it is the standard text of a bracha that it begins with nochach. Nochach is, you're talking to somebody, second person. And it ends with nistor, concealed. And this is because there are two dimensions in our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to feel intimately bound to Hashem, as if He's here. We could talk to Him all the time. He listens to us. He cares about us. But we also have to have a sense of reverence, of distance, of recognizing Hashem's infinite power. And we can't treat it in an overly familiar way. And to feel that you can approach Hashem, not through the ways that Hashem said to approach it, is in a sense an over-familiarity. It's an azas panim. It's a certain arrogance. If Hashem says, this is how I want you to serve me, for a person to say, well, we're such good friends, can't we skip the formalities, is in a sense a certain chutzpah. That a human being can have. And that's why the bracha is belashon nistar, to remind us that in spite of our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and of course, perhaps the neichach is mentioned first because that's the most important thing we have to feel, but we have to couple it with a sense of reverence as well.
Remember, the sequence is important.
Yeah.
Second and third. You don't start with the rechuk and then go to the...
That's what I'm saying, that we have to first emphasize the kirev. Because the kirov might be the hardest thing to feel, because Kadosh Baruch Hu is not visible to us, etc. So that is how we learn the story of Nadav and Avihu, and that's really kind of the connection to Sphira, because Sphira reminds us too that Kabbalah Satayra, that the connection to our Kadosh Baruch Hu depends very much on accepting Hashem's yoke and the Kabbalah's soul. But in the sense of joy, again, there's an important idea. There's an interesting topic. That's Kabbalah Satayra was a Kabbalah. We were asked to accept it. We were asked to accept it, even though it's a yoke that we don't have the choice not to accept it. Meaning, part of the avodah of a Jew is to take what you must do and make it into something that you choose to do. We must, whether we like it or not. But Hashem says that ultimately we should turn ourselves into choosers as well. And that's the joy in the yoke of Hashem. It's a yoke, it's a burden that is put upon us for which we have no choice, but then we rejoice in the fact that Hashem gave us this opportunity. And one could even say the whole avodah of a person is to go from being a muchrich, someone who must do it, to someone who is now making a choice to do it, but recognizing that that choice is something that one is a muchrich to make. So that was a word about Nadav and Avihu. And that's why in Shabbos' parsha, Acharimos, that's why once again it connects not going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the death of Aaron. It says, V'dabar Hashem el Moshe, Acharimos, after the death of the children of Aaron, Hashem told Moshe, Al yavo b'chol eis el HaKodesh. Do not enter the holy places whenever you want. See the significance? Nadav and Avihu wanted this unlimited access. And Hashem says, Acharei Mos, Al Yavo, V'chol Eis El HaKodesh. Let me just tell you a final thought, which again is connected to Shavuos. Obviously all these parshiyos and Sphira will have a connection to Matan Torah. That's why they fall this time of the year. We read on Shabbos the Avodah of Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur service. In fact, this is the Kriyas HaTorah of Yom Kippur morning, the Yom Kippur service. And although it's not that clear in the Chumash itself, but as you know, the Kohen Gadol had two different types of uniforms. One was the uniform that comprised eight garments, the breastplate and the ephod, etc., that he would wear the entire year. And then there was only linen garments, four basic pure white garments that were worn when he would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. And even on Yom Kippur itself, he was constantly changing from the golden garments, as they're called, the eight garments, which have gold thread in them, to the linen garments. And he changed a total of five times. Right? Every time he'd go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he'd have to wear the white. When he went out, he would go back to the gold. When he went in again, white. Right? So he changed five different times in the course of Yom Kippur. And every time he changed, between changings, he'd have to go to the mikveh. So he went to the mikveh five different times in the course of Yom Kippur. And the question the Mefarshim ask is the following. I understand. He's going from the gold to the whites. Right? As he's about to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He immerses himself to prepare himself spiritually because he's reaching such a high level of Kedusha, the holiest place in the world, the holiest day. So you have to be tevel. That's a hachana. Going to the mikveh generally, this is even true for the mikveh that women go to, it's a preparation for Kedusha. But the question is, when he's leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he's going from the white garments to the gold garments, he's going back to the everyday korbanos. Remember, even on Yom Kippur, we bring everyday korbanos. The daily morning offering, the afternoon, these are the daily korbanos. So why does he immerse then? I mean, he's not going up. So the emes is, in a way, he's going up to even a higher madrega. And that is to say that the Kodesh HaKadoshim is the attainment of a pure spirituality. But the purpose of attaining those madregos is not just to have it then, but to bring it down into the material world that you're going to be involved in. Take the Kodesh HaKadoshim and bring it into the workday world. And that is a madrega which is very, very high, because it's easier to attain ruchnius by separation than it is to attain ruchnius by involvement. And therefore, the same spiritual preparation that a Kohen Gadol needs when he's entering the purely spiritual world, he needs an even greater preparation when he's taking that spirituality and bringing it into the daily world. And the emes is, this is a remes for all of Avodas Hashem, particularly on Shabbos and on Yom Tov, where on Shabbos we create, to some degree, a separation from the material world, particularly on Shabbos. Because Shabbos we don't do malacha. We don't cook, we don't do any malacha on Shabbos. But the real purpose of Shabbos is not only for Shabbos, but the real purpose of Shabbos is to take the Kedusha of Shabbos and bring it into the entire week. In fact, the Mefarshim say that's why we have the famous statement in the Gemara that if Bnei Yisrael were to keep two Shabboses, there would be Geula. Although Mordechai ben David has just one Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Someone asked him this, and he said that he follows, since he composed the song in Eretz Yisrael, he follows the Talmud Yerushalmi that says we would keep one Shabbos, we would be redeemed. Okay, but the Bavli says we have to keep two Shabboses. So he says, the Mefarshim say, that is because we have to keep a Shabbos properly, but then it has to impact on the whole week that follows the Shabbos. You see, because until we keep a full Shabbos properly, it's not going to impact on the week. And then when we have a whole week that's been elevated, and then the week elevates the next Shabbos, then we're ready for Geula. Because ideally, a Shabbos has to culminate from a whole week of Kedusha that was infused from last Shabbos. So when you have a whole week, following that week, you've completed a whole cycle in a proper way. And then one will be Zocha to Geula. So again, the lesson is that the spirituality attains its ultimate meaning when it sanctifies the material world that we live in. That one's Wednesday afternoon is supposed to be different. Because of, Wednesday's already next Shabbos, because of the coming Shabbos, Tuesday afternoon should be different because of the past Shabbos. And that too is something we think about. The Sfas Emes says, how come it is that the Havdalah after Yom Tov, you don't have Besanim. Why do we have Besanim on Shabbos? Because we have an extra Neshama on Shabbos that goes away, so we feel faint. Rashi says the extra Neshama enables us to eat more, but again, it's understood more than on a literal sense. Eat more means we absorb more ruchnias. So the Sfas Emes says that's because even if the Neshama Yisera of Shabbos can leave, but the Neshama Yisera of Yom Tov never leaves. It always stays in you. So after every Yom Tov, we do have this capacity that is within us But in an ideal state, one should try to cultivate even the Shabbos neshama to stay a little bit longer. Okay, so I think we'll stop here.
I don't know.